listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host of the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have a very special guest, one of my favorite people on the planet, a friend of mine for 20 plus years, Mr. Eric Bradley. How are you?
Hi, man. How you doing, Nikhil? It's great to see you. Great to be here.
Great to see you as well. I should say songwriter, guitar, musician, pop star when he wants to be, rocker when he wants to be, and artist relations when he wants to be at Guitar Center. You and I used to work at Guitar Center way back when.
You toured
the country. You toured internationally. Tell me, what was the moment of Zen when you were growing up that made you want to become a musician?
The moment of Zen growing up. Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, you know, just like any kid, you know, you gravitate towards something that you might be good at. And I tried to play sports. I was a big kid, a lot bigger than any of the other kids when I was 10, 11, 12. So they would put me in the sports with all the older kids, and I would get my butt kicked. You know, it was just no good. I had no skills. I was awkward playing with older kids that had been doing it for a while. I tried all the sports. I wasn't any good. And my older brother played guitar and picked it up one day, and it was like, oh, I think I found my thing. And I started taking lessons, and within about 6 weeks, I could play anything he could play, and he'd been playing for like 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
So I just played just circles around him immediately. It just took to it really well. And I was like, wow, this is my thing. I'm really good at this. And I feel real great when I was playing music. It was just such a great outlet as a, you know, young man, a young boy. I was just like, had all this energy and angst and or whatnot. And that was where I was able to channel it to. And because it came so easy, just the skill set, I just excelled really fast. I had a blast doing it. And then, you know, I was playing at the level of, you know, the people that were much older than I was, you know, might have been, you know, 14, 15 playing in a band with people that were 21, 22, going into bars, sneaking in, you know, or that's having to go with my mom or dad, you know, to be a part of it. It was fun.
Where were you? Where were you? Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in the northwest suburbs of Chicago.
Wow.
There's the big airport outside there. It was about, you know, 20 minutes northwest of that. Place called Palatine, Illinois.
Wow.
And
talked about that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And do you remember the song that you first started playing?
The song that I first I just remember, putting it in my hands and like, you know, messing around. But the very first riff that I learned to play was 25 or 6 to 4 by the band Chicago.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which was super simple riff, but it was like, this is how you play a bar chord or a rock chord. And it was like, dun, 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 dun. And I was like, yeah, I can go. And then I was like, this one's called Smoke on the Water. And it was like the same thing, but reverse. And then it was just off to the races.
And do you think it was like the patterns on the guitar that just made sense? Was it the feel, the sensation, the hand-eye coordination just clicked right then? Was it all of the above? What do you think it was that kind of like drew you to it?
I think it was a combination of a lot of those things because it came easy and it was just like instant that I could, it just sounded good right away. It was like, wow, that sounds like that song. And I can just do this. And I could hear something on the radio or or some song and just instantly play it back. I remember being in maybe sixth grade or the seventh grade, and my brother, like I said, he was older than I was, and he played music and was in a band, and he would want to go out on the weekends with his friends and have fun, and he'd go, okay, here's the list of songs. Learn the songs so that when I come home, you can teach them to me. And it was like U2, Billy Idol, Van Halen, INXS, you know, anything that was on MTV in like 1984, you know, could play this Motley Crue song. It was like, yeah, I could play any of it, you know. And it was like, I mean, you know, it's like I could play Eruption when I was 13. And, you know, that was mighty impressive to the, you know, the young ladies at my, my junior high school that I could do that.
You start a band in high school or middle school or anything?
Yeah. I think they had the variety show when you're in grade school. Me and another friend got up there in our fake leather jackets and our road lights, and we did some, you know, goofy two guitar version of Smoke on the Water, and that was my first gig. And you know, it was like I felt cool. I had a, you know, fake leather jacket, and I was backstage.
Hell yeah.
And then, you know, it was like all the little girls, oh my gosh, you know. And I was like, yeah, all right, why would I ever want to play sports? Yeah, I wanted sports. That's yeah. And then, you know, as I got older and grew into it, it was, you know, there's a, you know, huge emotional element of playing music and just being able to express yourself, like when you're angry or you're sad or just, you know, all of those things. And, you know, yeah, it was great. I mean,
Did you start writing songs then? Were you writing your own songs by then?
Yeah, I was writing music right away. Somehow my brother and I had convinced our parents to buy us a little cassette 4-track recorder.
Awesome.
You know, a little Tascam that we got at, you know, a guitar center and, you know, in the north side of, you know, Chicago at the time. And, you know, I made up some little songwriting ditty, and I won some contest, you know, like an arts contest. Yeah, I think I was, you know, same thing, sixth grade, seventh grade. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. I was, you know, that was like the first thing. And people were like, you didn't write that. And I was like, well, who? Yeah, I did. This is what I did. Yeah. And, it's just so funny that like that's, you know, boom, that was where it started. It was a little, I had learned to scale, and it was like, and my guitar teacher called it, you know, this is the Arabian scale. So I wrote a song, it was called Arabian Nights, and it was my little chord progression and my little melody. And, you know, I tracked it together, and I had a little harmony thing going on. And, you know, I mean, at the time, it's like, you know, my parents were like, wow, you're really advanced. You're really young to be doing something like this. Yeah, it was fun. It was easy. And it was mine. You know, it was something that I did, and it felt really, really good. And I think that gave me a lot of confidence as a kid, and, you know, growing up, and then, you know, young adult and stuff, you know, just because I excelled at it, you know, rapidly at such a young age. It was good. You know, it's, you know, I mean, my story is not unique. There's a lot of kids that start the same way that, you know, I mean, just like some kid would be good at, you know, painting or some, you know, well, he really excels at, you know, playing baseball. It's, my thing was, it was music. And,
but isn't it cool how you just like found it so young? Like a lot of people, they still don't know what it is. And like, I was lucky too. Like I found music at such a young age where I don't know if I could have handled middle school or anything like that without it.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah,
we're lucky that we found it. Now, did you join a band with your brother ever or no?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, we thought, oh, we'll borrow our friend's video camera and we'll be on, you know, MTV had this thing called Basement Tapes, and you could send, you know, a really cheesy VHS copy of your band playing some song to MTV and see if you could get on. And, you know, we made a video. I mean, it was, you know, not good, but
you got a bunch of
kids. It was fun, and it was just, you know, the whole process of it. And I mean, if we ever want to have a laugh, I mean, I have the video. I'll show it to you. I mean, it is hilarious.
Just because we're friends and we know each other.
Yeah, and I have You know, it's funny. It's like I look back now. I mean, I have the same haircut I did when I was like 12 now. Like that haircut's still in style. Cool. Awesome. And, and it's like we start rocking and I have like nerdy kid glasses on and I start headbanging. I stop. I take my glasses off and I start headbanging again. And it's like that is like the most precious moment that I could have. I think when you talk about, oh, what was the moment? That was the moment.
You're like, I want to do this.
Yeah,
this
I'm taking my glasses off and I'm going to rock, you know.
That's right. That's right.
And that's well, what, it, you know, and I never like, look back.
It's kind of like Superman's cape. It's like once you put it on, you yeah. feel like a different person. I still kind of feel like that. But yeah. also, there's an electricity when you're doing it where you're like, oh my God. Even if you're playing to a track, it's like you feel it. It's palpable. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, God, it's incredible that you feel yeah. the rush in the same way.
Yeah, that, you know, that emotional compact, the physicality of playing, yeah. you know, how it's shooting off all these, you know, things in your brain that you didn't know or what they were or why. And, you know, I mean, it's great. It's a great therapeutic tool now as I, you know, as I grow older, it's,
yeah.
you know, I mean, I, you know, I'm sure you're the same way. It's like I work out, you know, 99% of my problems on the guitar. I mean,
yeah.
it's a,
yeah.
And I mean, my gosh, what a beautiful gift to be given by the powers of whatever. Like right. here, you have an outlet, so you can, you know, save you from yourself. If you
yeah, say, no, yeah. but that's absolutely yeah. true. It's like a lot of people don't realize, you know, people think musicians just want to be famous,
and yeah.
it's not that. It's like a way of living. It's a way of breathing. Yeah. It's a therapist, you know, all in one. And it's like some of my favorite moments, I'm sure you're the same, are when nobody's around. And,
yeah.
you know, like trying to capture that in front of people is like, that's almost a struggle because it's so intimate when you're just by yourself playing and having these cool moments, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's at those points where you know, that's your identity. You know, it's like, I'm a musician and my art is music, you know, or vice versa.
What were you listening to? What were you listening to at the time that was making you just keep working at it?
I mean, my first earliest interest in music was, you know, hearing the Beatles, I think, when I was like 4 or 5 years old. And I mean, looking at the album cover of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band and, you know, every day I wanted to be a different person on the cover. And I remember, you know, one time, you know, parents are working and I came home from school and I put the album on and I turned it up and we had these like, you know, decorative tennis rackets on the wall. I don't know why. It was the 70s. So I take one off the wall and I'm playing it like a guitar and I'm standing on the kitchen table and I'm rocking out like I'm in the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And my grandma had come over to take care of us and she walks in the door and I could just hear her over the music. What are you doing? And I just remember just like, oh my gosh, if I made her that freaked out, this rules. I gotta keep going, you know. That was another one of those like moments, you know, and it's like, oh yeah, you know.
You know what's funny is this is why I love interviewing my friends, because like you don't know these like really like random moments that shape your life. You don't have those conversations when you're just hanging with people.
No,
this
no.
is a fantastic story. I love that you just shared that. That's amazing.
Yeah. And I mean that, yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm just that I, you know, such a vivid memory and the pitch of her voice cutting through the music. Cause I had it turned up and I was, you know, it was 20 years ago today, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's in the band.
Systems too, you know.
Yeah, and I just needed to find other people that wanted to do that too, you know. And, you know, eventually you do, you know, you get to junior high and it's like, oh, that kid's got a drum set. Okay, cool. Let's go to his house on Saturday afternoon. And, you know, you convince your parents to help, you know, drag your little guitar amp and go over there. And what songs do you know? I don't know. And then you just figure out, you know, you just start playing noise and then you play something, you know, and then, it was just so much fun. That was how I just discovered, you know, it was like having your own secret language.
Right.
You know, when you were that old, and you could go into, you know, the next town over, but you knew, you know, where we grew up, you know, a whole bunch of high schools in a, you know, 5 mile area or whatnot. But you knew all the music people at each of the high schools, you know, Because, you know, it's like, because you all were doing the same thing. It's just, oh, those guys at that school do it too. Oh, and you go to a party and they're playing and then you play and, you know, and you're in a band. And I mean, still, I'm still friends with some of those people to this day that I would meet at, you know, kids, you know, party when I was a kid. Because it was like, we went over to the town, two towns over, because that kid, we heard he played drums, you know, and that guy's one of my best friends today. You know, it's like that kind of stuff. It's. You know, and I mean, that's it. I mean, I hear similar stories from my heroes. It's like, right. Oh, yeah, you know, I was going to the bus to go to school and, you know, he had a guitar in a case, too. And I said, what's that? And he opens up. And I go, oh, I got one of those at home, too. And it's like, you know, that's how, you know, those two got, you know, Jimmy Page and Jeff Beck started because they were, you know, didn't live in the same town, but they both, you know, they just could tell. It was like they had this secret language and. You know, and that's it. It's the language, you know, it's just, you know, being able to play music is a beautiful thing, you know, and you could connect and, you know, you connect with somebody that, you know, maybe, you know, from another part of the world, you know, as it goes on, you know, and that's also amazing too. And that's, you know, that's the huge power of music. I mean, that's what keeps me, you know, playing today. I mean, it's the true, you know, universal love and the true universal language. And, you know, I'm just so glad that I still have it in my life, and you know, I chose to pursue it, and it managed to, you know, just kind of fan out in so many different, you know, aspects. You know, like you said, early, you know, intro me, and it was like, yeah, I've had my fingers and worn in a lot of pies and worn a lot of different hats in this music business, and have a blast doing it, you know. And I've had some amazing, you know, life changing, altering experiences, and. You know, wow, what a blessing. What a blessing.
So, and you graduate high school. And
yeah.
When do you come out to LA? When are you like, I'm going to come out?
So I, you know, I play in a band all through high school, and it's all with kids that are older than I was. And, you know, we did the, you know, DIY where you, you know, make, you know, start your own record label in your basement. So we tried to do that. And we put out an album right when I graduated high school, and we started touring the little college circuit the first year. I was, you know, and all the guys that I was playing with were, you know, 21, 22, 25, what, you know, a couple years older than I was. And, you know, we toured, you know, in that, you know, around the Chicago area and, you know, all the other, you know, surrounding states and the colleges and did that. And then after a couple, you know, that band kind of fizzled, you know, it, you know, fizzled out. People, you know, it ran its course for some of the older guys. Like, yeah, I don't want to do this. I need to buckle down and, you know, fall back. And to me, it was like, we're not falling back. This is what we're doing. What do you mean falling back? And so that was my attitude. And, you know, I did end up going to college for, you know, a little bit in music and business in Chicago at DePaul University. And after, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, you know, it took some sort of elective course where a guy came from LA to teach what they called was a music business course. And, you know, and everybody in that music school wanted to be, it was more angled towards nobody. It wasn't like rock and roll or pop music. It was people that wanted to be in orchestras or wanted to, you know, teach, you know, choir in the church choir or things like that. And they went around the room and asked everybody what they wanted to do. Well, I want to be the first chair violinist in the, you know, Chicago Symphony Orchestra. I want to play the Boston Pops. I want to be a trumpet player and go to London. Or I want to play jazz. I was like, well, I'm in a band and I want to write songs and, you know, be a singer and, you know, and, you know, and follow in my idol's path. And, you know, I want to be in a band like the Beatles or Led Zeppelin or something. And he was like, you're the only person in this room that has a chance. You know, nobody has, you know, you have to write music in order to do this. And then he said, well, if you want to do that, what are you doing in college? And the light bulb goes off.
Right.
And it was like, yeah, what am I doing in college? Because it's like, you're not going to, what I needed to learn and what I needed to do and experience in lifetime was not going to happen in college. So
yeah,
much
true.
To my parents' chagrin, I quit school and, you know, hightailed to California 30 years ago.
Wow.
1993.
That is crazy.
And, you know, to follow a dream, you know, 22 years old, had a band together for about a year. And I convinced everybody, like, we'll keep the band for a year. And then at the end of the year, we're moving to California. You know, that's what we're doing. And I was the leader. And everyone was like, okay, cool. You know, and they, you know, and that's what we did. And
You all moved together? You all moved as a band?
Yeah, a whole band. We all moved to the San Fernando Valley, coming from the northwest suburbs of Chicago. And at the time, you know, 1993, grunge music, it's happening. We'd come out to California to visit. And, you know, Sunset Strip was a thing.
Right.
And then, but literally by the time, it felt like the month that we moved to California, the whole thing dried up. It was like, wait, where did all the people go? Right. There's nobody around. You know, there's no, where's the bands? How come no one's handing out flyers and going crazy on the Sunset Strip? All those things you heard about that were happening in the 70s and 80s. And it had all changed. And then the scene, you know, in Chicago at the time, you know, the Smashing Pumpkins were kind of a thing, but they just put their second record out. We'd moved to California. They put their second record out and it blew up like massive. Right. And then all the record labels go to Chicago and sign all the bands that we were playing with in Chicago. Yeah, we were killing all these bands. And, you know, we had a following and we're doing, no way, we're going to California. We're going to LA, you know, and it was just like, you know, in case of just bad timing, I guess. But, you know, it was what it was. We moved here and you know, formed a life out here.
Isn't that interesting, though, like how, like, when one band hits so big in a city, labels will just start, like, the Seattle grunge scene was huge because of Nirvana and Pearl Jam. And then all those bands got signed because it's like, well, there must be something going on here. So let's sign a bunch of bands. So
and that, there, you know, similar thing happened in Chicago. I mean, it wasn't quite as big, but you know, there was definitely like an underground punk alt scene going on. And I wouldn't say that our band was any part of that at the time. And we kind of had our own thing going on, you know, what we were trying to do. And, you know, there was a couple, you know, bands that, you know, if a new signed band would come through to town, the promoters in those clubs would always have us open up for them. And one of those bands was called 311 and, you know, 311. And so we opened up for 311 in, you know, fall of 93, like a month before we moved to California. And they're like, yeah, we got a record deal. And, you know, we moved to LA and they didn't want us to, they didn't sign us there. So we went back to where we're from. And then they all came to Nebraska and signed us out of Nebraska. And we thought it was so weird. And here we are playing with them in Chicago. And our music was kind of similar to that, you know, Red Hot Chili Pepper, funky, you know, rock, heavier rock kind of, you know, that kind of thing. So, but it was wild to watch them, you know, kind of find their way. And that was at a time in the record business where, you could, you know, they put out one record and it was a great record. It didn't hit, but the record company stuck with it, you know, and then the next record had a song that some people liked. And then by the third record, you know, had two or three songs that everybody liked. And then, you know, and I remember, you know, maybe we'd been in LA for two or three years and it was like 311's headlining at the Palace, and then and we go to see him, and then there was this band with this girl singer that was in front of them who was kind of yodeling while she was singing and dancing around, and everybody loved it, and it was ska, and we thought it was terrible, and it was No Doubt.
Yes.
And it was like before No Doubt was huge. It was like, we were like, what is she doing? It was like, she's like, babbed under her eyes, you know. It was like, ugh. It's like, get her off, we want to hear 311. And because 311 was, they were the big band, every, you know. And yeah, it was crazy. It was really crazy times. And, you know, I remember, you know, meeting, talking to the guys after the show, like, yeah, man, we played with you guys in Chicago and in 1993 before we moved here. Like, oh, cool. Sticking with it. Cool. Great. Good for you guys. You know, there's a lot of people, you know, they moved to California. They have these, you know, expectations.
Right.
And you're coming from your hometown where you know, maybe you had a following and you're, you know, your thing was happening, and you get here and you don't know anybody and nobody cares. And there's a million bands that have come from their town that were huge. And, you know, 6 months to a year, they're all gone, you know. Right. So if you can stick around for a year,
live in the city, they realize, oh, LA is not for me, or expensive. And it's also like you start to miss family, you know, that just
happens. Absolutely.
The other thing, too, is like, I know, you know, never know who's gonna hit around you. Like, you could be in a group of like 20 people that are all artists and all bands, and one of those people may get lucky enough to get this huge break, and then they skyrocket, and then you just see like who still kind of like stays with it and kind of like goes after. You know, Sarah Bareilles was like one of the artists that was kind of in my scene when I was coming up, and
she
one person that blew up so big, and you just never know. There was no rhyme or reason. It was just like
People were just playing music and loving it, and being part of it. To be a part of a scene was a beautiful thing. Yeah. I mean, I want to say that I saw your band, you know, when we first met each other working at Guitar Center at the, you know, the old Knitting Factory. I want to say she opened up for you guys, or you opened up for her, or, you know, and it was just her sitting there playing guitar. And I mean, I remember playing Knitting Factory, and it was like you did the show, and it was like they added on somebody last at midnight. Yes. You're like, what? Why did you do that? And it was like, and it was Katy Perry, you know, and it was like, and the next thing you know, she's like, mega. You're like, how does that happen? You know, right. And it's like, but you know, you stay here in California long enough, those are the kind of things that happen. Right. I think before we were doing the interview, we were talking to, or I was talking to you about some of those experiences that we had moving here. And there's a really funny one. You're talking about, you know, playing with other bands when you move here and things like that. And so when we came here, we were, you know, 23, 24. I thought we were super young, but we were, you know, old, but we weren't, you know.
Right. Right.
And, you know, young was the 16-year-olds and the 17-year-old kids. And so we ended up playing with all these bands here before they all made it. Incubus.
What?
I mean, we played at the Troubadour with Incubus a bunch of times. We played with a band called Kara's Flowers, which became Maroon 5.
Yeah.
And then another band we played with a few times was a band called Phantom Planet.
Yep.
And they eventually had this song that was, a soundtrack to a TV show. Well, at the time, and then the drummer of Phantom Planet was Jason Schwartzman, the actor.
Right, the actor.
And his mother is Talia Shire, Adrian from Rocky. We were playing, we played a few shows with them, and she comes up to me after one of the shows. She's like, you know, you're really good. You're really talented. But you have to smile more on stage. You have a really nice smile. Just smile on stage. And I just thought that was the funniest thing. It's just like, yo, Adrian, you should smile more. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, I just kept hearing, what do you mean I got to smile more, Adrian? I'm a boxer. You know, I'm thinking, no, I got to look tough. You know,
I didn't know that Jason Schwartzman's mom was.
Yeah, that's Talia Shire. Jason Schwartzman, And so, and he's, mega actor now. I mean, he was the drummer in the band, and it was just funny knowing them. And it was like, they had a completely different lifestyle growing up. I mean, they're in the, their parents were huge in the entertainment industry, living in Beverly Hills or wherever they lived and the money and the things, they turned 16 years old. And I remember going to see their band would play with us, and they would have like the brand new $5,000 PRS guitar and a Mesa Boogie half stack that was brand new. And you're just like, and I've got, my $400 Ibanez and, this amp and a bunch of pedals, PV. I'm like, oh man, you're just like, oh man, we still have a chance, And it's like, but it didn't matter, It was like, we had a lot of heart. So people were like, that's a cool band, And so. It was a lot of fun. I mean, just so many stories. I mean, it just goes, and that was, the first 2 years that I had moved to LA, a year and a half, 2 years where something like that happens. And
let's play some music, because I know we're going to have.
Okay, sure.
What do you want to play first?
One of the things I sent you, I have been playing with. A friend of mine, his name is Chris Wise. He's a bass player, and he plays in a band called the Hollywood Vampires right now.
Oh, yeah.
That super group with Johnny Depp. And,
right.
And
did he replace Bruce Witkin? Because Bruce Witkin was.
Bruce was in that band at first, and then Bruce left the band, and then it was, Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses, and then it was a bass player from Stone Temple Pilots. And then they kind of morphed from being a cover band to like writing their music. Johnny was like, well, I want to write songs and do this thing. So, it's like, basically it's like part of Alice Cooper's band, Alice Cooper, obviously, as well. And Chris playing bass, and you know, Joe Perry playing you know, guitar, and the person who wrote all the songs or worked with Johnny in the songs is Tommy Henriksen, and that he's been Alice Cooper's right hand guy for, you know, last 10 years, and you know, music director of his band, and so he became music director of Hollywood Vampires, got Chris in the band. But Chris and I, we had met each other about 20 years ago when we both had played in a band with Jerry Cantrell, the guitar player singer from Alice in Chains. That's how he and I met. And then we had been playing on and off in each other's bands since then. And one of the songs that we just did, we did a Black Sabbath song for an Ozzy tribute record that was supposed to come out, and then pandemic happened, so it never came out. But we made a really cool video, and that band's called Owl, and that's one of the songs I sent you. It was us playing, covering Children of the Grave by Black Sabbath, which is, you know, and it's a fun video because it looks like it's super fancy, but it wasn't, but boy, it sure gets the point across.
Let's play it. Here's
Children of the Grave. Yeah. Thank you.
That was awesome, dude. Yeah,
thanks, man. Dude, that's kind of like a magic trick, you know?
On like a fisheye lens or something, right?
Yeah, I mean, we played through the song once or twice. There was this weird little camera that our drummer had. He's like, we're just going to – it takes a three-dimensional, you know, 360-degree photo of everything, and then you – takes a lot of memory, but you put in a computer and you can focus in on any part of anywhere of any given time of what it is. But it was just that camera was just stationary right in the middle of us. And we were just, you know, going around it. But boy, it just turns into a magic trick because you can just spin it around and it, you know, it looks way crazier than, you know, than it is. And it's funny because like that kind of, if you made a video like 20 years ago, that look like that, it would cost you millions of dollars because you'd have to have dollies spinning around and all this stuff. Well, now that camera's like, you know, $300 at Best Buy, and you can make something like that. And it's, you know, if you just have the, you know how to utilize that technology now, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, just, you know, they'd asked us to cover that song, and we were like, yeah, absolutely, that'd be a blast. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. You know, Chris and I have been singing.
Was this for the Twilight series?
No. So that was something different. That particular version of that song was, we were invited by, there was a company, a record label on the East Coast that was going to put together a, you know, Black Sabbath tribute and have, you know, they had a whole bunch of names lined up. And I mean, I heard all the tracks. I mean, Zakk Wylde with the Zakk Sabbath Band did a song, Anthrax, oh my gosh, Overkill, a whole bunch of other, you know, up and coming East Coast bands, and, you know, just all sorts of stuff. And you know, Owl, you know, Chris and Dan is the drummer, Chris Spacewood, they're, you know, grew up in upstate New York. So they consider themselves an East Coast band, even though we're, you know, here. When we play.
I love the mix of that song too. It's like such a fine line where you can have the guitar driving and still have the vocals present. But the drum.
Oh, cool. Yeah, thanks.
What makes it so rocking, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're going to, you know, step in those hallowed waters of, you know, trying to cover, you know, Black Sabbath song or something like that, you know, you've got to have your ducks in a row. You got to have the right people doing the right things. And, you know, we all, you know, let each other follow our own instincts. And, you know, Chris and I, like I said, we've been singing together for years, and, you know, when we were playing with Jerry Cantrell, I mean, we were singing all the, you know, we learned how to sing all those harmony parts with Jerry from Alice in Chains, which made that band, and, you know, singing those songs with him. I mean, you wouldn't get that going to college. You'd have to meet those people and play with them and understand that, wow, you share a lot of similar influences, and this is right. How they all come together. And, you know, we learn those kind of things and stuff. One of the other songs I'd sent you, was associated with the, Peter Facinelli, who was, the father of, the Robert Pattinson character in Twilight. So he was in the Twilight series, and, he wrote and directed a movie, and it's, somebody that was working with my band at the time, he was mixing the music for the movie.
Wow.
And they wanted, they had all these songs that were placeholders for, the scenes in the movie. And, what ended up happening is, you know, typical music business stuff, you know, what the first song was like supposed to be a real famous song, you know, by a band called Silver Sun Pickups, and, you know, and they wanted a ton of dough for the, you know, to have their song. You want to use our song, you know, $60,000, you know, whatever the number was. They're like, dude, we don't even have half of that for the budget for the whole movie for the music. So my friend who was mixing it, you know, he in his, with his, you know, being at the right place at the right time, he's like, well, one of our songs will fit perfect right there. So he cut our song into the opening credits of the movie, and they're like, done, you're in. And
let's play that. What's the name of the song?
That song's called Sugar Blues. That movie came out in 2011, and it's been around the world. It keeps getting licensed in all these different countries.
That's awesome.
And I mean, because of that, you know, I have, you know, I can consider myself a career artist, and you know, have income streams coming in from around the world through ASCAP and things like that. And you know, and it was like, we ended up getting two songs in the movie, but I mean, we got the opening scene of the movie, opening 2.5 minutes is, you know, and we wanted to use that as the video to the song. And they're like, no, we're not going to just let you use,
right,
the, you know, their, you know, high budget thing. So, you know, we made our own video, and that was fine. And, but it's wild because people in other parts of the world have taken that song, and they've made their own video cuts to it.
That's from different awesome.
Parts of that movie, from different parts of anything. It's such a flattering and humbling thing. You know, I was like, wow, people, you know, wherever, you know, because I mean that, you know, that Twilight series, I mean, that was mega around the world. Yeah, yeah. So any, you know, just anything associated with it, you know, if you get associated with something like that, you know, and you know, you get, you know, get some attention. And I mean, it's you know, I mean, it just allows me to keep doing this. And just the fact that now, still 10-12 years later, a new video of that song will pop up very randomly, and I'll be like, that's crazy, you know.
Well, let's play it.
Yeah.
Here's
perfect. That's the Young Royal. I'm not afraid to
Yeah, man. What a well-crafted rock song, dude.
Thank you. Thank you.
Super well, like, arranged. I loved it, man.
I appreciate that. Thank you, man.
Super beautiful. I've never heard that song of yours.
Really? Wow. Yeah, no, it's been, you know, it's been a part of the repertoire since that, you know, went down. And, you know, that song and that video that led to the Dean Castronovo, the drummer from Journey, he ended up joining the Young Royals. That, you know, he saw that video and heard that song, was like, can I be a part of this? I was like, of course. Sounds great. So
is that how you guys connected?
Yeah, that's one of the ways that it all came together. And I started working with him and went on tour with Journey, just kind of you know, as a tour manager, and just to be around him and work on music and, you know, get our band stuff together. And and at the time, we, you know, the idea was, well, let's rebrand Young Royals. Let's take everything down that you've released, and we'll make a new album. We'll take some of the old songs and redo them with Dean and a couple of the new guys, and, you know, a bunch of new songs, and put it out there and launch it and go for it. And, you know, and that was a process to get to the point to actually make it, you know, finish making an album. Cause, you know, we were, you know, I was on tour with their, you know, their band and helping them out. And some points actually, you know, got to open up for them, which was a blast in Japan. And, you know, just that was, you know, an experience to itself. But, you know, like a lot of things in the music business, you know, it ran its course, and, you know, we finished the record, but, you know, it just couldn't come to an agreement and of how it was going to move forward and why. And, you know, it gets to be, you know, the music business is sticky. It's right. And, you know, and on that level, when you get players like that, and, you know, something can happen really fast overnight in a big manner. And then, you know, and everyone, you know, a lot of people want to figure out, you know, who's getting paid and how much they're getting paid and when, and their percentage and who's worth more and this and that. It's like, you know, it got tricky, you know, and it was a bummer. Because we weren't able to release the album. He stepped away from the band. We had made the record. It was an amazing record. Toby Wright mixed the record and helped produce it with myself and the bass player. And, it was a pro level record and had every, had all the ingredients to, you know, go to another level. And, you know, and those, all the connections that we, you know, him working with Journey, you know, we test marketed a lot of the songs and went to go radio stations and played the music, and it was a blast. And then, you know, one day it was over. It was like, no, this isn't going to happen.
Just because, like, a business or
it was a business thing. It was, you know, there's a lot of a lot of people start getting involved, and and it wasn't that anybody didn't want to see us succeed or not succeed. It just got to a
everybody had their hands out, right?
Yeah, it was like, oh, some people, you know, they would, you know, draw their own conclusions about, what people's intentions were about wanting to be in a band like this. It's like, you know, and, you know, so Dean had to make a tough decision and say, yeah, I can't be in this band. And, you know, and even though we had worked so hard to put a record together and, you know, and made sure he could be in Journey and we could work Young Royals simultaneously. It just, you know, powers that be in the Journey camp were like, no, that's not going to happen. And it was, you know, over before it started. And I couldn't get the rights to the album, even though I had written all the songs.
That's crazy. So you guys got signed then? You got signed?
Yeah, I mean, we got signed and it just, you know, got shelved for all intents and purposes. And, you know, so what I ended up doing is I ended up re-recording the album with a different drummer, my dear friend Ryan Brown, who plays drums with Dweezil Zappa and his band, and he's also had played in that band Owl with Chris and I years ago. And you know, you get to the point, you know, I had recorded some of those songs 2 and 3 times, and it was, wow. Just, oh man, this is exhausting. And, yes. You know, it's just such a heartbreak to be so close and have all the pieces of the puzzle. And one person, you know, completely that is irrelevant to the whole thing goes, nope, it's not going to happen. Not on my watch, you know? And then, you know, and it's like, I just remember having conversations with people and they're like, well, it's a real drag. I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, no one's going to touch this now because of what that, you know, of the situation, and it's not going to come out. People won't get to hear it. That's the drag. And you're like, man, that is a drag, you know? So right now I re-recorded it, and then I recorded more songs. And then, you know, it just, you know, the wind came out of my sails and life happened, and it was, you know, it's tough.
Yeah, you shouldn't stop. I mean, you obviously. Yeah,
no, I didn't stop.
Have a song, record a song.
Yeah. What I did was I stopped that project. It was like, Young Royals, we're going to put that on the shelf over here. I'm going to take a step back and reevaluate, you know, what do I want out of music? What am I doing? And it's like, I love to play. I love to write. That's the most fun part about it, is to have a feeling or something, or pick up a guitar and, you know, you're playing something and then you start humming over the top, and then some sort of poem you wrote matches perfectly. And like, that's the part that really, really keeps me going.
Yeah.
That's it. That, and I love doing that part. And really only and so I just started doing that all the time, you know. And it, you know, 2018 we finished re-recording the album, and it was like, well, to try and put this out now and, you know, and just fight this battle, I just didn't have it in me. So I stopped, and then I just, you know, started writing music for no other reason than the joy of it.
Yeah.
And then pandemic, you know, comes and goes. And the next thing you know, I've got a back catalog of like 40 songs that, you know, that I would have not have written had I not gone through all these experiences. And it's, you know, some real great music that doesn't fall, you know. I used to write because I was in a band and the band was this, and this is what people thought the band should be or what I thought it did. Without that as a guideline, I could write any kind of music I wanted, period. Right. You know, so I'm writing songs that sound like, you know, it's like you listen to Paul McCartney, you know, like When I'm 64, it's like, you know, da 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 da, da, da. You know, it's like this, that same guy writes Yesterday and writes Helter Skelter. It's like, well, nobody told him what he could and couldn't do, and he wasn't going to follow any rules. So it's like, oh yeah, what's the rules for? There are no rules. So I started embracing that part of why I started doing this, going back to when I was 11, 12, 13 years old and just loving it. So that's how we roll. Yeah.
We're running out of time.
All good.
Where can people find you if they want to find you online and follow more of your story and find your music?
Well, you can follow the Young Royals on YouTube. We still have a YouTube channel that has some of the music up there. You know, the songs that I just, you know, the Sugar Blues, and there's a couple other videos. I'm on Instagram as ebiz1210. You can find me there. And I am, you know, like you said before, I'm the artist relations manager at Guitar Center Hollywood, which is a fantastic way to spend my days and meet people and help people get gear to make music. So you can come visit me at the store anytime.
Yeah, 5 days a week. I need to talk because I saw you talking with Gary Clark Jr. So we're gonna have a little wrap about.
Oh yeah, I mean, I meet a lot of people and have a lot of fun and you know, get to be inspired and inspire people, helping them find gear. It's great. It's a great thing. And you know, it's never a dull moment. So
that's what it's all about, Eric.
Exactly.
Happy holidays to you.
Thank you so much.
On Wake Up Hollywood, we're gonna have to have you back, man, because you and I can talk music forever. And
Yes, we can. I had such a great time speaking with you today. I really appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much.
Likewise.
And I look forward to you know, continuing this conversation, like you said, and look forward to seeing you. And you know, thanks to all your listeners and viewers out there. We appreciate everybody supporting you know, live music. It's what it's all about.
On behalf of Eric, myself, and Sam, happy holidays to all of you guys. We'll see you guys next week. Check out Eric's music. We love you. Peace and take care.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.